Trackers. It was a quiet week in racing last week, but this week we see the opening of Belmont Park and the final workouts for the Kentucky Derby. I'm Bill Gottemer, and my co-host tonight will be Mike Monroe. Later on, we'll be joined by Mike Hogan. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. As I mentioned, this week I'm joined by Mike Monroe as my co-host. Hello, Mike.
Bill, good evening. How are you, buddy?
Good. Well, it's a lot of excitement around this part of the world here with the opening of Belmont tomorrow.
Yep, warm weather is ahead, Bill. That's a good sign.
Yeah, it used to be going as far back as high school. Opening of Belmont used to be a day where you had to make sure you had the afternoon free, no matter what your schedule was.
Absolutely.
I'm not so sure the excitement is there like it used to be, and I guess you know starting on a Friday is better than when it used to start on a Wednesday. But I guess, you know, it's still nice to get back to just a beautiful facility out there.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, even when you're out there in the morning and just looking at that beautiful racetrack and a grass course, how good the grass course looks, I mean, it's just a gorgeous racetrack, and it's a shame that we don't get the crowds and the publicity that we used to get. Kind of miss those days.
Yeah, no, I do too. I guess you're out there each morning, Mike, or every other morning, and I haven't been out there in a couple of weeks. You say the grass course looks like it's just ready to go.
Oh, it looks great. It looks great. They got the cones up on the inside of the grass course. You know, horses will be out there, I'm sure, pretty soon. Sugar's back. Christoph Clement is back. So the main track is opened. It opened last week, and horses are training over it, and everything looks good.
Well, you know, you bring up Christopher Clement, and that's a training angle that probably isn't spoken about enough. It seems like Christopher Clement, more than anybody, sees Belmont as his version of Longchamp, and he's gone on record as saying it's New York City's race course, and New York City is the most important place to him in the world, and he really likes to win there more than he does other places. And while so many people focus on Saratoga, the Clement bond seems to come up ready to go in Belmont each year.
Absolutely. They bring the horses ready to run. As a matter of fact, I think the first horse that they shipped in that ran at Aqueduct came back a winner. I think Dylan Davis rode the horse. He gave the horse a great ride in an allowance race. And that's another loaded bond. You know, Sugar's back. Everybody's starting to come back. Now Kieran's back. So, it's a good time of year.
Right. Well, it is funny to think about, trainer patterns. And you know, Kieran was on the show 2 weeks ago, and he spoke about how important it is for he and his owners to win at Keeneland because the farms are right there and the horses are raised there and the people who gave birth to them, or watched them give birth, rather, get to see them, and it's really a celebration of all things racing. And we know there are certain bonds that aim for Saratoga, But the Christopher Clement bond aiming for Belmont is really something that not many people talk about. And it's funny, he wins so many races at Belmont, and by the time he gets to Saratoga, he always has good Saratogas, but never tremendous Saratogas, because he's run through most of the conditions and most of his horses have peaked so well at Belmont. But clearly, if you're betting races, just a blind bet on almost everything he runs at Belmont is probably a pretty good way to go.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. That actually is a really good angle. Like I said, he won with the first horse. I think he ran back at Aqueduct. But, I mean, Bill, you being an astute player of the game and people on the show that are listening. I think one of the greatest angles in horse racing gambling had to be when the chief used to come back, God rest his soul, but when the chief used to come back from Gulfstream or Hialeah in those days, and he would run in April. His numbers were off the charts. Remember when he would come back and
right.
run those horses back in April?
Right. I mean, he clearly used Florida as a training ground and a prepping ground. Well, you know, I guess other observations about Belmont, and these are just mine, and maybe they're not backed up by statistics. I'm sure now everybody has statistics, and someone can probably call in and prove me wrong. But it seems to me on the Widener turf course, which is the outer turf course at Belmont, it seems it's very difficult to wire the field, to go wire to wire on that grass course with those wide turns.
Absolutely, 100%. And just to confirm that, if you look last year, I think more horses made that balcony move at Belmont, you know, on that grass course than in years before. And the inner course was so more speed conducive, almost like the inner track in the winter, where sometimes if you got to the lead in the inner track at Aqueduct, you know, you couldn't get beat. They would be like a merry-go-round. They would virtually run 1, 2, 3 all the way around the racetrack. And if you watched on the inner track, on the inner grass course at Belmont, especially earlier in the meet, that a lot of horses went right to the lead and stayed there. Now, Bill, look at the last week that we had grass here at Aqueduct. If you weren't near the lead or a length or two off the lead, virtually you had no shot. I think the only horse that closed that came from far back was on Sunday was the Belmont horse, Khaleesi Cat. But other than that, they were going 25,
right.
25 and change, 50 to the half, 51 to the half, and the speed was just golden on the grass at Aqueduct.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, so clearly it's a whole different ball game at Belmont, and it's a whole different ball game whether it's the inner track or the Widener, and it's an easy way to think to remember it, I guess, if you need some help. You know, the Widener is the wide turns, and you want to be wide, and the inner is as you said, speed conducive.
Right.
You know, well, speaking of. The Ogden Phipps stable and Shug McGahey, and that's another stable that's of course so synonymous with New York racing, and so synonymous with Belmont, and especially going long, and I'm looking at the first race at Belmont, and it's probably no accident they probably did them a favor, but it's a maiden special weight going long, a mile and a 16th, which again is longer than they. Would ever go at Aqueduct with maiden special weights, and we have it's a lot of the usual suspects, but we have the Phipps stable with a horse called Mayaka River, who's beautifully bred and has run poorly in both of his outings so far, but I would expect that tomorrow he would probably Jose Ortiz run really well with an additional distance and the blinkers on.
Bill, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have my racing form in front of me now. I'll have to pull it up. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe he ran on Wood Memorial Day in the first race from post one going 7/8. And if I'm not mistaken, he's a big, good-looking horse, like you just said, great bred. But he was on the inside rail that day on a speed-biased track. And it really looked like he was spinning his wheels over the Aqueduct main track that day. I'm with you. I look for him to run a much bigger race tomorrow. I think tomorrow is his go race.
Yeah, I mean it's blinkers on. It's the added distance that he needs. It's off of the rail. I mean he does face a horse, and I haven't seen much of this. He faces an Uncle Mo runner that missed by 3/4 of a length as the favorite down in Gulfstream for Todd Pletcher. But I see one that's actually owned by Todd Pletcher, and that's a bit of a rarity, right? That's to see Todd. It says Todd and Jake Pletcher as the owner.
And that's his dad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's his dad, and that is a rarity. I think Todd I've only seen that a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, when I look at this horse's history, he's a 4-year-old gelding, who they paid
right.
$550,000 for it at auction. So my guess is he had some setbacks and he had some problems, and maybe Todd and his father took the horse from whoever owned it, you know, or bought it from them or you know just accepted it as payment or something. But it's a little odd. But he will probably take all the money tomorrow, and probably he and Mayaka River will probably you know, fill out the exacta, and maybe you can get the longer price, toss Mayaka River on top just to open up the Belmont meeting. I didn't mean to get straight into handicapping. It's just that you're just trying to see what we have coming up this week, and the opening of Belmont seems to be the biggest thing that I've seen out there so far.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm like you. Like when you said at the onset of the show, I get really excited, you know, because you know the warm weather's coming, you know, and for me and the other agents, you know, being at Aqueduct all winter and in the dreary weather, and you know, staying in the office, in the racing office at Aqueduct, waiting to draw. I mean, that, you know, now with Belmont, the nicer weather, you sit outside, you know, you go in and out of the office, watch the races outside, you know, sit in the stands. It's just, you know, it's just a whole different venue, and it's more exciting, and then knowing it's, you know, Saratoga is right around the corner, but I love that Belmont meet, Bill. I love Belmont. You know, I was raised around Belmont. That Belmont is my favorite racetrack. I just think it adds the beauty, you know, to New York racing. I think Belmont is the place.
Yeah, I think we all feel the same way. I mean, for listeners who aren't from the New York area, Aqueduct is I like Aqueduct. It's utilitarian. It's become less friendly and less pretty as time has gone over, as the casino has taken it over it. But it's a workhorse, and it's sort of industrial. And Belmont, on the other hand, is, as you know, as Christopher Clement says, it's like it's our version of Longchamp. It was designed after the European race courses, and it's pretty and it's beautiful, and it's a good day to be around. You know, I read a great article, Mike. I forget where it was written, but it was a year ago, and it said, "Go to a racetrack and spend the day." And of course, mm-hmm. we like being at racetracks, so you don't have to convince us. But
right.
it was a thing for just local people just to go out and spend the whole day, and not necessarily bet and not get involved in the wagering, but just get the sights and smells and sounds. And you know, we spoke about Earth Day this week, and sometimes it's hard to get in touch with nature, but it certainly isn't at Belmont Park, man. I mean, if you're sitting out in the back there, and there's horses and people and ducks and ponds and trees and grass, it's a fine way to spend the day.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but like I just said earlier, there's just something about having your binoculars. I know you're a big guy at watching races live, Bill, and I just think Belmont is just the perfect place to watch a race live.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a place you need binoculars because they are far away. Boy, it can be daunting, and enough about that. I guess the only other thing I see on the weekend, I'd like to make a mention. You spoke of Kieran, and we'll speak of our friends at Zilla Racing Stable. They have their horse Celtic Chaos in the eighth race tomorrow, and you know, we're always rooting for them. That's a horse who's gotten better and better for them, and you know, just continues to improve. And they're in for $100,000 tomorrow, and I hope they. I hope they get a part of that purse. It's
he shows up every time, Bill. He's been a very consistent runner in the McLaughlin stable, and the people at Zilla, they're just really, really good people who, you know, they're passionate about the game. They're out there in the morning. They're watching their horses train. They're taking pictures of their horses. You know, they're feeding their horses. You know, they're just great owners to have around in the game. We need more people like the people at Zilla.
Yeah, no, they're a lot of fun, and they're a good bunch. And Celtic Chaos is 2-for-4 at Belmont, so it's not like, you know, he seems to like that course as well. Our good friends at Paradise Farms have two horses in tomorrow, and those people are family. I mean, the Zilla people are great and real close friends, but Paradise, of course, is family, and they have two horses tomorrow. And I guess their good filly, Free and Clear, was to be ridden by Junior Alvarado, but he got some bad news today from that spill he took on Sunday, and he needs a minor surgery again on that repaired shoulder he had.
I spoke to Junior the other day. And you know, Junior is a, you know, I had Junior's book when he first came here from Arlington, and he, you know, he's a great rider, a great person, and still a very, very close friend of mine. And you know, once he went down, you know, you feel it, you know, especially having that working relationship with them. And you know, the bad part is that Junior is going to be out for a little bit, but the good part is that it wasn't, you know, the a catastrophic injury for the jockey as it could have been. I mean, Junior was lucky when he went down that he just was able to roll out of the way, because that horse was very close to rolling right on top of him, and who knows what could have happened then. But, you know, I spoke to Junior the next day. He was going for the MRI just to make sure that the injured shoulder that he had the surgery on, you know, that everything was okay, and you know, all the muscles and the limbs in his shoulder, you know, nothing moved on him and stuff. But I guess, you know, I guess they have to go in there and do a little bit. Maybe the ligaments, you know, one of the ligaments tore or something like that. But you know, he'll be back. But you know, it's unfortunate. You know, he was out a good part of the winter, and he came back and he was riding, you know. He's a very strong rider, and he was riding in top form. You hate to see it happen to any rider, but you know, one that you worked for and you worked with so closely. You know, like I said, in Junior, it's just a tough beat for him. You know, he's an excellent rider, and he's got a real bright career ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, he went down so hard, and he said he felt fine. But again, it's good that you know, discretion is the better part of valor. To the MRI and make sure you're not making anything worse. So I think it's 2 months that he's out. So I understand they're going to replace him with Chris DiCarlo as the rider on Free and Clear for Pat Quickbon, and I guess Paradise also has another horse, a horse called Gun for Hire, in the second race. So we root for them. And in that race, Mike, I know you didn't go to Cary High School. You went nearby high school, but some people I went to high school with own the horse Tody Royer, who's running in the second race, and that horse has stepped up at odds of 80-1, 100-1, just keeps getting better and better, and sort of likes it wet, and was second last time at 80-1, so we wish them luck too. But
absolutely,
it's a lot of fun. The other part of the weekend to really mention, and I guess we'll get to jockey things in a minute, I had an opportunity to speak with Javier Castellano last night, and I'm going to play that tape. That's about 5 minutes. But he informed me that he'll be at Belmont tomorrow. He was at Keeneland today, and he's at Belmont tomorrow. And then Saturday he's going down to Gulfstream Park, and he's riding four horses for Todd Pletcher, two maidens and two stakes horses. I don't really know who he's mostly going down there for. It's probably a combination of all of them, but that's kind of interesting that he's going down to ride by appointment.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Javier is he's a great ambassador for this game. He's an excellent rider and a great person, and I was so happy to hear that he was accepted into the Racing Hall of Fame. He's just another good person in the game that is deserving of the award.
Right. Right, and we'll speak to him. I'm going to play that in a minute, but you know, it'll be worthwhile to keep an eye on his horses. And I haven't really looked at it, but it's two maidens and two minor stakes horses. So maybe the maidens are the horses that to watch, because maybe they have some big future. Before we get too far along, I want to do a couple of things. I want to thank the people last night. Our guest Kieran McLaughlin and Jim Mulvihill from last week. Jim Mulvihill from the NTRA. We had a wide ranging, nice discussion, a good discussion, and that was great that they came on and gave us their time. And we congratulated Kieran on his four victory day at Keeneland, his record day. And tonight we're going to have a lot of interesting people tonight, Mike. This is a nice show. We have Javier Castellano. We'll play that tape, and then we're going to have a trainer by the name of Mary Tate, who has an interesting story from Emerald Downs, and she's involved in horse rescue, but has just taken out her trainer's license and had some success in the first week. And I think we'll be joined by Matt Dinnerman, who's the race caller at Emerald Downs, who brought this to our attention. This story. So we're looking forward to that. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll be joined by a fellow named Mike Hogan, who I don't know, and I don't know if you know him, but I know him from Twitter, and he used to work for Formulator in a daily racing form, and he's a statistics-based handicapper, you know, so he uses long-term statistics to kind of predict trainer patterns and rider patterns, and I think he'll be an interesting.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I'm sure he'll be an interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of people in the racing world and in the overall sports world who are really talented who find themselves with a job one day and out the other. And you know, we had Jason Blewett who's going to land somewhere, certainly, and Michael lands somewhere, I'm sure. And I guess we had all those people at ESPN who got laid off this week. I don't follow it as closely, but I know there are a lot of them.
Right. Wow.
But, Before we play the tape with Javier, I guess a couple of things. Rider change. Luis Saez is going to be the new rider of J-Boy Zecco.
Yeah, we talked about Junior Alvarado, and, you know, we can't go without mention about Robbie Alvarado, who unfortunately was hurt in a spill the other day, and from what I hear, they did surgery on his leg, so he's going to be out for a good part of the summer. And that's a shame, because this will be the second time that, unfortunately, that it's happened to Robbie right around the Derby time. We can all remember Animal Kingdom. He was the rider, scheduled rider for Animal Kingdom. So, it's a tough thing. Luis Saez is a capable replacement, a good young rider, who could definitely get the job done. And, Dale Roman's, he seems to – this horse is okay. I mean, he has I think he's one of the horses that maybe this Churchill Downstrip is going to play into the hand for. And we wish, we love Dale. We wish him all the best of luck.
Yeah, I mean, it's that the horse could really run big. And it's funny, I don't know if your wife, Julie, is like my wife, that she tries to follow it because we follow it. And I really confused her last week when Junior Alvarado and Bobby Alvarado fell within an hour of each other, and one hurt his shoulder and one hurt his ankle. And she was trying to follow it,
Funny you say that, because, Julie, knowing that I had Junior, she was very concerned. And, of course, we both reached out to Junior, and but then she said, then she was telling me about the leg, and I said, no, that's Robbie Alvarado. And she said, no, I saw it, but it's just a concern for these riders, even like you said, my wife, your wife, and people that aren't even directly involved in the game, but just care because of our relationship with the game, that are also pay attention and interested in the well-being and welfare for the horse, the rider, the trainers, and everyone on the backside, and that's a great thing.
Right. No, absolutely. I guess the Girvin saga. Girvin is a horse that I thought might have had a shot in the Kentucky Derby, but he's had a big training setback, and it's been shrouded in mystery. And it turns out he has a quarter crack, which for our listeners is the equivalent of a broken nail. It really is painful for horses, and it's hard to run through it. And he's had a couple of workouts that have been delayed, and there are a couple of methods where you can try to fix it, but they're giving it their best. But if he has a quarter crack, going a mile and a quarter against the toughest 3-year-olds around is a tall order.
Oh, absolutely. It's unfortunate. How like you said, things could be going so well up to the race, and then all of a sudden, bang, a setback like something like this. And they're racehorses, they're not machines, it's a tough thing. But before we go on to anything, we were going to talk about the Derby, but if this year's Derby isn't one of the most wide open Derbies in a long time, Bill, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll hear Javier talk about it right now a little bit, because we spoke a little bit about his horse Canavera. Before we do that, two things. One, we have a new sponsor in Poppy's Place, which is a restaurant outside Belmont Park. So if you're at Belmont and you're looking to have excellent food and, more importantly, excellent conversation about racing, either before, during, or after the races, Poppy's Place in Floral Park is the place you want to go. And they're friends of ours, and we're proud to have them on board. And they're at in Verbena Avenue in Floral Park, but it's Poppy's, Poppy's. Excellent food, Mike. I know you're familiar with it, and you like it, and it's kind of taken the place of the old Esposito's as a place to go after the races. Esposito's used to be the place right across the street, but long gone, and now going into Floral Park. So anyway, I hope I'm happy that they're sponsoring the show. Tell them you know us if you go in there. Continue right along. Two retired horses this week, Armor Chatterbox and Private Zone, both stakes winners, both really hard-knocking horses, and I guess, one off to the breeding shed, and Private Zone being a gelding off to old friends' retirement home, and best of luck to both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. They were both exciting to watch. Both, like you said, both hard knockers, and you know, and we wish Amit Chatterbox all, you know, all good things in the breeding shed, and the other guy, happy retirement.
Yeah, I mean, it's just people, he'll be a fan favorite out there because he tried hard every time, and that was great. Well, you know what we're going to do? At 8:30, we're going to be joined by Mary Tate and Matt Dinnerman, but right now I do want to play the Javier tape that we had. It's about 5 minutes long, and Mike, just stay on board, and we'll
Absolutely.
Pick up right when it's done. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'm proud to welcome Javier Castellanos to Racetrackers. Hello, Javier. I'm happy to welcome Javier Castellanos to Racetrackers. Hello, Javier.
Yes, sir.
Javier, big news this week. Congratulations. We want to be the, well, among the first to congratulate you on the announcement that you'll be inducted into the Racing Hall of Fame this coming August.
Yes. It is too. I'm very satisfied the way everything come out. It's a great, great new career, and I'm so truly happy the way, I mean, very work out in my life and my career. I'm so proud, and a lot of help, you know, a lot of people, they put me a little bit to help me out to put in the next level of my career.
Well, it's the absolute highest honor you can have in this game, and You've had a wonderful career, and you have so much longer to go. But it's so wonderful to be recognized so early on while you're still active, and so early on in your career.
I mean, very, you know, very lucky, very fortunate, very blessed to be announced for, you know, this award, and I being able to enjoy my career early. You can say that, you know, it's very, very fortunate, you know.
Right.
A lot of people.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you're going in with some other riders and the wonderful horse, Golden Cover. It'll just be a spectacular day in August, and I'm sure you're looking forward to it.
That's correct.
Javier, shifting gears a little bit, you continue to ride well everywhere across the country. You seem to be always on an airplane, and you seem to be riding big races just about everywhere and having just tremendous success. You have a mount in the Kentucky Derby. You're gonna ride Gunavera. Any special thoughts about him?
Well, he's a great horse. He's been through a lot of, you know, auto spread for the Derby, and the way he performed every single race, I think, I believe, is a good. This kind of horse, he got some skill to put a great performance in the Kentucky Derby, and that's my target in my career. I've been done a lot of things, very lucky, very fortunate, but one thing I would like to target, you know, and then to win the Kentucky Derby, that's my goal, and I've been trying to reach this goal, and I hope it's coming this year.
Well, we're all looking forward to it. It'll be a full field, and it'll be, you know, largely a rider's race, and I'm sure you'll think about it a lot, trying to map out the perfect trip. I guess you'll know a lot more once you know the post positions.
Yeah, you know, basically that kind of horse, you come from a high horse, that's his style. Definitely you're looking for better post in the race, but it's a mile and a quarter race. You have a lot of things you can go and try to work it out. It's 20 horses. I believe the Kentucky Derby is one of the biggest races in the world. And you got to be lucky. You got to be very fortunate. You try to be in the right place in the right time with the horse to get it off.
Yes, yeah, of course, it's such a big part. You know, when we laughed when we interviewed Angel Cordero on the show, he said that before he won the Kentucky Derby on Cannonade, he dreamt the night before about his father telling him to stay inside. And that's the path he followed to victory. So I guess you have to pay attention to any dreams you might have the night before.
I hope somebody give me some tip how to win that race, because, I mean, I'm being worried about those dreaming.
That's great. Well, Javier, we don't want to keep you. We know you're busy. We know you're riding to Keeneland. Will you be back in New York over the weekend? You're back riding to Belmont on Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm going to be tomorrow. I'm going to be in Keeneland, and then opening day, I'm going to be in Belmont. Saturday, I'm going to be in Costume Bar, and back to New York Sunday.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to saying hello to you on Friday. I can't thank you enough for always giving us your time, and I wanted to personally congratulate you on the wonderful honor of being in the newest, about to be the newest member of the Hall of Fame. So congratulations again.
Thank you so much, Bill. Thank you. I appreciate for everything being done.
Good night. Thank you, Javier.
Thanks a lot.
So I apologize for the quality of that call. It was kind of difficult. I think Javier was traveling or in a car, and we did the best we could. But he, obviously he's looking forward to the Kentucky Derby like any rider does.
Absolutely, Bill. And I think he has a live horse this year in the Derby. And like I said, he's a great person, and I wish him nothing but the best and good luck in Kentucky.
Yeah, he was just a tremendous work ethic. I guess riding four horses a day is it'll be like half a day for him. It'll be like a day off. Normally in Florida he rides 12, but but with that, what I'd like to do is I'd like to welcome our main guest on. We have Matt Dinnerman and Mary Tate, and let me patch them in right now, and we'll talk about their efforts. Good evening. You're on Race Trackers.
Hi.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for joining us on Race Trackers. What I'm going to do right now, just give me a second. I'm going to patch in Matt Dinnerman, who you know, and you're here with Mike Monroe and myself, and we'll have a quick conversation. Just let me welcome Matt. Hi. Good evening, Matt. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Bill. Good, Bill. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. Well, Matt, we have everybody in on board here. I don't know if you know my co-host, Mike Monroe, but we have Mary Tate on board. And Matt, for our listeners, Matt is the race caller at Emerald Downs and brought to my attention this oddity that took place last week with Mary Tate's horses. But first, before we talk about that, Mary, let's talk a little bit about you. I understand you've just taken out your trainer's license, but you've been a horsewoman for most of your life.
Yes, sir. I've been involved in horses in one discipline or another my whole life, but definitely thoroughbreds just in all different disciplines before I got involved in racing.
Right, and I understand you're largely involved in helping thoroughbreds who are done with their racing career find second careers in eventing, in barrel racing, and equestrian efforts, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I run a Facebook page called Retiring Racehorses Pacific Northwest, and it's been very, very successful. Last year, it was somewhere around 150 thoroughbreds found new homes in all different disciplines.
We've spoken to many rescue people in the past on the show, and there seems to be, you know, so many horses in need of a home, and I'm sure. You know, you do a good job, or you do the best effort I can to get them before they wind up in dire straits. Do you do any rescues from horses who wind up in bad situations?
I do. For every win, whether, you know, beforehand when I was an owner and now as a trainer, for every win, I rescue a horse. Previously, I founded a nonprofit horse rescue, and that was very, very successful and did a lot of rescue work that way as well.
Well, great. Well, Matt, I want to let you talk a little bit about, if you can, talk a little bit about what you saw with Mary's first two starters and what you brought to our attention.
Well, it's quite an interesting scenario. Obviously, Mary's been around the racetrack for a long time. She's been around a lot of horses. I met Mary last year on the backstretch, and she owned a number of horses and helped train a bunch of horses, but didn't have her trainer's license. One of her horses, Papa Frank, one of the winners last weekend, Mary had last year, and she claimed off of a trainer for $7,500. And slowly and surely, Mary was able to get this runner to improve, and he steadily climbed up the class ladder and he even hit the board in a couple of allowance races, which was really nice to see. And this year, Mary acquired Many Shades of Gray, a sibling to Papa Frank. They're out of the same mare, Tialinga. And interestingly enough, both of them were entered this weekend. Mary was able to get her trainer's license over the off season. And what was really interesting was Mary had brought to my attention that these two were brothers and that they were both in her barn right before a photograph she took came out. But when I saw the photograph she had posted on Facebook, she put the two brothers next to each other meeting for the first time, and they were sort of snuggling against each other. It was just a really beautiful moment. And I decided to share it on Twitter, which got a lot of responses. And luckily, what was amazing was not only the photo was so amazing, was but Many Shades of Gray and Papa Frank were both entered in races 1 and 2 on the same day. Went on to win, and Papa Frank in the very, very next race went on to win. So it was really just an incredible situation. And then Mary brought to my attention a few days later that she found out a third sibling out of that mare, Sweet Ray of Sunshine, who's done a lot of good on both coasts. She won at Aqueduct that same day. So it's just been a really special week to be able to see these horses and, you know, see this photograph and have this story come about. It's, I've never heard of anything like it, to be honest with you.
Right. I mean, Mike, do you want to get Mike Monroe in here? Mike and I have followed races for the better part of our lives and been around a long time. Mike, can you ever remember three siblings winning on the same day?
Not to my knowledge. And like you said, we go back a long time between the two of us. No, not at all. But, you know, it's funny about Sweet Ray of Sunshine, Mary and Mike. I represent Rosario Montanez, a good young rider on the New York circuit. And we actually won a board, Sweet Ray of Sunshine, for Rudy Rodriguez down in Laurel over the winter. She's a hard knocker, good-looking, gray filly, and she ran well the other day. Actually, she ran so well. We actually finished second to her in that race. But you know, she's a really nice hard knocking filly, and it was nice to be aboard for one of her career wins.
She is a very nice horse, and as you said, Rosario rode him so well. Mary, did you go out of your way to pick up the sibling? Was that by design, or was that just circumstance?
Oh, it's absolutely by design. I've been following the mare since we claimed Papa Frank last year. We were very interested in acquiring the mare, so I kind of been following siblings, and I couldn't justify paying what they were running Many Shades of Gray for. He just didn't have a great form, and he didn't seem to be showing any way improving or any chance of improving. He just kind of got worse, really. And I just happened to be walking through another trainer's barn, and he said, "Hey, there's a couple forms on my desk of horses down in California that the trainer wants to sell." He said, one of them's a gray horse. You should buy him and bring him up here and sell him, get him a good home." And I went in his office and I picked up the form and I looked at it, and really the numbers were pretty scary. So I said, "Well, maybe." And then I looked at the name and realized it was Many Shades of Gray. And he said, "Well, that horse won't be competitive here, but you should give him a shot for resale." So anyway, one thing led to another. The previous trainer ended up selling me a package of grays. He sent me two of them, and I actually like the other one's form a little bit better, but the owner and I discussed that he probably just wasn't going to want to be a racehorse anymore. He had kind of retired himself. He was pretty depressed being at the racetrack, so I ended up selling him to an eventer home and figured, what the heck, it would make a really fun story to be able to run Frank's brother, and there we went from there.
Well, that's great. I mean, so you take out your trainer's license after many years of being an owner and many years being around, and you it's hard to have a more auspicious start. I mean, you win your first race outright with a horse who you kind of nursed back to health and made, not nursed back to health, but made into a racehorse after he had declined. And then the second race, you wind up, you have some bad racing luck, but you wind up being placed up by disqualification. So you have luck going at every angle.
Yeah, it was a pretty neat day, and the rider happens to be my best friend as well. So it was just special all around. She had said from the get-go,
wow,
she wanted to get my first win for me as the trainer, and she did. She delivered for sure.
Well, that's wonderful. I've seen from your and Matt, I want to let you give a little bit of a pitch for Emerald Downs, which is, I understand, a beautiful place, a place I've never been. But Mary, I know I read your article about your efforts and how you extol the virtue of what you call war horses, or horses who have had a lot of starts and been around for a long time. And I know Mike and I kind of share that same admiration for those horses, and they seem not to hurt themselves because they know how to protect themselves, and they become old veterans at the game. And do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
For sure, they're near and dear to my heart. I've never ever had a war horse retire off the track that wasn't good at their next career. They're athletes, and they're very smart athletes. They've taken care of themselves, and they've been good at what they do. And I think also a lot of them are appreciative of their next life, which is generally a much easier life than being a racehorse. I just think they have a different view of life than a racehorse that has very few starts. And I think overall they're generally a very sound bunch. I've sat through a lot of pre-purchase exams, probably 70 or 80 in the last year, and it's very, very surprising to see what a lot of these old hard-knocking horses have. Nothing, you know, no major injuries. Or if they did at some point have a major injury, they've overcome and still continue to be good at what they do.
Right.
So, yeah, I was pretty happy about that article. I think that's very unfortunate that a lot of horse buyers look over at war horses, because I think they're very special animals.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention, it seems that you have the luxury or the ability where you are to have some break with the horses and just allow horses to be horses, for lack of a better phrase, and you get to turn them out, and sometimes you even use some of your thoroughbreds and allow them to do some other types of training. Do you want to talk a little bit about that too?
I do, and I actually feel that is a very important thing for these thoroughbreds to get to go off the track. All of them at some point have gone on trail rides. Papa Frank is a huge fan of trail rides. Every time he races, we go out to the trails, and he gets to stand in the water, and he's been to the beach. I use a couple of them, the ones that need to build up their confidence, and then once they get the confidence, I use them to push around cows, which they seem to really, really like to do. They get to be a bully.
Okay.
But I think thoroughbreds are very smart horses, and I think they like having a chance to reset their brain. And I personally believe that cross-training a horse is better on their body as well. If you're a marathon runner as a human being, then you don't just run on flat pavement all the time. You run on a bike, you swim, you do all kinds of things to develop your body, and I feel the same way about the thoroughbreds. I feel like you're reducing the chances of injury if their body is fully developed and not just developed on the flat.
Right. Well, you know, we know from practice that, you know, horses – you're giving them wonderful different experiences, but even as little a thing as changing bonds or changing the views from their stall can freshen them, right, Mike? We've had some in the past who've just taken a whole new outlook on life, given some a different viewpoint or a different experience.
Absolutely.
You know, with that, Matt, I want you to give a little pitch for Emerald Downs. We've been to a lot of racetracks. I've never had the pleasure of being to Emerald Downs. Tell our listeners a little bit about where it is and what you look out over and what it's specially known for.
Well, Emerald Downs is a gem of a racetrack, and all I knew of it was the Long Acres Mile when I was down in Del Mar and basically doing my thing down there. I grew up in San Diego, but Emerald Downs, you've come to realize when you're here that it's really a really fun track. Large crowds here. We're in Auburn, Washington. That's Washington State, about 30 minutes south of Seattle. A beautiful track overlooking a lot of trees, a lot of green here in Washington. And one of the attractions here in the state of Washington is Mount Rainier. And when there's not a lot of clouds out there, if you look down the chute where they'd run the 6.5 furlong races, and you look out, you see this huge mountain. It's bigger than Mount St. Helens. It's very large. It's far away from the track. It's probably at least 60 or 70 miles, but it feels almost like a painting when you look out there. It doesn't even look real. It's so beautiful. And Emerald Downs is really known for just a fun atmosphere. It's a lot like Canterbury. You get large crowds when the weather's nice. You get a lot of events going on here, things like Indian relay racing, camel and ostrich racing we will bring to the state of Washington this year. And people just seem to have a really fun time, and the horsemen are great to be around. A lot of really good people, a lot of people that care deeply about your horses, as you can see by Mary. She's just one of many horsemen who are very, very hands-on with their horses, care deeply about, A, how they run, but also, B, the safety and the health of the horse. And Emerald's turned into a really fun track, and I'm always very excited to head to the races every day because you know you're going to get a fun atmosphere with a lot of festivity and fun races.
Right. Well, Mike, I venture to say you've never had the opportunity to get to Emerald Downs, have you?
No, Bill, but I watch it a lot on TVG, and you know, I like the racing down there. Mike, you do a great job calling the races down there, and you know, it looks like a nice race course.
Thank you.
Well, it's funny, you know, I had a couple of things. Mount Rainier is probably famous in this part of the country because every once in a while you'll see a car with a bumper sticker on it that says, "My car climbed Mount Rainier." And I remember that's pretty popular, I guess. If you go up there, you put a bumper sticker on your car. I don't see as many as I used to, but when we were kids, you used to see that all the time. But my two connections with Seattle were Mount St. Helens erupted on my birthday, which was kind of nice. Wow. of nature to celebrate for me. And sadly, I was in, the first time I was in Seattle, one of the few times I was there, was the day Kurt Cobain died. And that was a day of kind of city mourning for everybody because he was so, you know, so tied to the city. But it's a beautiful city with just beautiful air and just I know the harbor there is the crispness of the air struck me as being memorable.
You know, it's really amazing. And when you go down to California and then you come up here, Bill, and I'm sure you felt the same way when you came to Washington for the first time, just how clean the air is. Like you said, it's really amazing in the water, how pure it is. It just seems like, obviously, when it's raining, you know, it's not quite as fun. But when the weather is nice in the summertime, which it is very nice, and you get that feeling of fresh air and nice water, it's just very people feel very, very pure that way. And I think people up here have a really positive attitude in that respect. You get a lot of really down-to-earth people here, and it's a really, really nice place to live.
Yeah, Mary, I'm sure you echo those sentiments, but have you seen a change in Seattle? It seems like it's become more affluent over the last 20 years with a lot of successful businesses out there.
It has, and actually before I trained racehorses, I sold real estate, so I can definitely back that up. It's a booming area, and real estate is a terrible business to get out of at this stage. Everything's growing and everything's selling. But it is a beautiful state. Like Matt said, the air is clear, clean, and it's pretty. I could do without the rain, you know, three quarters
right.
of the year. But yep, take the good, the bad with the good, and
yeah, the rain and the steps, right? But do you still have the Pike fish market there, where they trick tourists into thinking the fish are alive? Is that still
active?
Yes,
and downtown.
Yeah, right in downtown Seattle there, right? They have the fish market that looks like it's they throw fish across. Mike, you've probably seen it on the television ads. They throw fish across and capture them in newspapers.
Yeah, I've seen that before. It's pretty neat, but I know that what Mary was saying, Seattle, you guys do get an awful lot of rain there, huh?
So much rain. It's kind of never ending. When you first get here, it takes you in a little adjustment period to get used to how much rain. It's kind of wearing on your emotional state to look outside and see gray skies so much. But the good seasons here are beautiful, and we do have green all year long. Our grass never dies, so in the winter, it's still pretty green and nice outside, even if it's raining. And it, you know, most years it doesn't get that cold here. But Matt's definitely correct. This is a beautiful trek. It's an absolutely beautiful place. It's breathtaking to look at the mountain. And they did a nice job when they built this.
And I was going to say, that's one of the benefits now of TVG is that you get to see tracks that are in such beautiful locations, and Emerald Downs is clearly one of them. Mike, we'll have to make a business trip out there to go see Matt call a race, and Mary get in the winner's circle with you with one of your upcoming winners. We don't want to keep you too long. And Mary, just how many horses do you have now, and do you have anybody we should keep an eye on for going forward?
I actually have six. I have a couple on the farm that I'm keeping fit, galloping them at home. They're just horses that I'd rather do that. It's a little easier on their body to get them fit at home and then bring them here to race. I really do like Papa Frank. I think he's a fun horse to watch. Like Matt said, we claim him for $4,000, and you just never know where he's going to show up next. So he's a good one to watch. I have a little grazing gelding I'm really hot on. His name is Steve Bilko. Again, a cheap claimer, but I think that he has a lot of run in him and a lot of potential. I just claimed a pretty neat little Lucky Pulpit gelding last week, and his name is Silver Chrome. He was a 20-start maiden, but somehow he was always there. He just couldn't quite break his maiden, and I figured, well, whenever this horse does figure out how to win, there's probably going to be no stopping him. So I expect him to make a couple climbs.
Excellent.
And that's pretty much it. I mean, I really like everybody in my barn, and they're moving in the right direction, but those three gray boys are probably the most interesting.
Well, we want to congratulate you on winning two out of your first two starts. I don't know what you do for an encore. We also want to congratulate you on being part of a racing oddity, a nice one. And Matt, I want to thank you for bringing it to everyone's attention on Twitter and helping me get in touch with Mary and coming on the show. And I hope you guys will, you know, spread the word at Emerald Downs that we have some fun out here and on this each Thursday night, and certainly come back to join us anytime you'd like.
Thanks so much, Bill. It's really an amazing story, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, and same. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I'd love to talk about this story, and I really appreciate your time.
Right, and we'd be remiss if we didn't give a shout-out to your rider, one of your best friends, Aliska Kubanova, right? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, well, congratulations to her, and I'm glad she got to ride your first two winners, and that's just very nice. So I want to thank you again, and please don't be a stranger. Mary Tate and Matt Dinnerman, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun, right? That was Mike. That was wild.
Oh, absolutely. You like to hear those success stories. Not just out of New York, Bill, but all over the way you just covered it, and I think it's great for the game.
Yeah, no, it's just, here you got running to different parts, literally bookends of the country. You know what, I don't want to rush along, but I have Mike Hogan holding, he's got a schedule to keep, and I want to welcome him to the show, so we'll patch him in right now.
Sounds good.
Good evening, you're on Race Trackers.
Hi, Bill, thanks for having me.
Hello, Mike. How are you? Mike, I want to introduce you to my co-host, Mike Monroe. Mike Monroe's been, and I have been watching races for longer than we want to admit in New York, and Mike's a jockey's agent for a number of riders over the years, but now with Rosario Montanez, and he co-hosts the show with us. But so I want to welcome you, and I'm sure he does too.
Absolutely, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, and nice to meet you guys.
Yeah. Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself. I probably didn't do you justice by introducing you earlier in the show, but I know you've done a number of digital marketing, and most recently for the Daily Racing Form, and you're mostly a statistic-based handicapper. But tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Well, sure, yeah. My background professionally is definitely in marketing, and for about 3 years I was at the Daily Racing Form and helping market a lot of their products, and particularly the premium products like Formulator. And one of my focuses there was really using a lot of the information that you find in a product like Formulator that many of the players don't have access to if they're not using the product. You know, you have all the people that buy the paper or the people that buy the classic PPs or even some of the competitor products that don't necessarily have access to the huge database that Formulator has available and all the other features that Formulator has available. So that was one of my main goals, was really just to expose people to that. And, you know, I won't say you're completely wrong, but I'll correct you a little bit. I'm not really a statistical handicapper, although that was one of the things from a content standpoint that I focused on while I was at the Daily Racing Forum, was really just looking at the betting market in particular about certain types of horses based on certain types of trainer trends. Are certain trainers overbet or underbet or undervalued, shall we say, with certain type of runners? Using that information and exposing people to it, that was one of the things I did. And it ended up maybe going a little far to the point where, Bill, like you said, I think a lot of people thought of me primarily as just that, when really, you know, I'm a bread and butter handicapper. It's about trip, it's about class, it's about the horse, it's about form, it's about all of that other stuff. And you want to think like a trainer, you want to think like an owner, you want to get at the trainer intent, but I don't begin and end with, you know, this trainer is 20% in the money with these types of runners. It's more a secondary or even tertiary kind of view for me.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean,
if that makes sense.
We see you, and Mike Monroe is not on Twitter, so he has a whole world. He has a whole world to eventually enjoy or despise, as depending on how you look at it moving forward once he gets on it. But I know you were on Twitter a lot, and you still are on Twitter, and you'd have to fend off a lot of questions and a lot of people making a lot of various statements, and I thought you handled it pretty well, because Twitter is the great unwashed public out there, and everybody has a say. Tell me a little bit about, you know, about that experience of having to defend Formulator or push Formulator from that aspect.
Well, you know, I look at it like this, and maybe you guys take the same approach. We're all horse players. We're all racing fans. And as such, we have something in common that sets us apart from the rest of, I would say, probably 95, maybe even 99% of the public out there. So we
right.
immediately, like, I come from the standpoint of, well, if you're on Twitter and you're talking to me and you're communicating with a racing brand, you're already a friend. You know, even if you come at me adversarially, you know, where are the PPs, or this isn't, or, you know, whatever, even if you're adversarial to an extent, there's still this base. You're a race guy or woman or fan or handicapper or horse player. So there's something we have in common. And so I always would reply, and I would always approach it from that standpoint, even if somebody is seemingly kind of a jerk, we still have this one thing in common. And a lot of times in doing so and approaching people like that, you end up becoming their friends, and you end up coming to and showing them that they have really, you know, we have more in common than we have differences.
Right. Well, I think the one thing, it's a little bit like being a baseball hitter. The one thing you have in common is you're probably wrong at least 70% of the time. I don't know anybody who picks more than 30% winners, and so you have
sure.
to eat your words constantly,
sure.
and it's constantly a choice. And Mike and I have spent the years with people who, you know, who, and sometimes we're that person, but you someone ridicules your opinion and you're proven right, and they tell you, well, no, you really weren't right, because your horse would have lost if somebody else had a better trip. I had somebody scream in my face in a New York City OTB restaurant one time that he'd rather bet the horse who had the higher sheet, who got the higher sheet number, than actually won the race. And I just replied to him kind of drolly, well, then you don't know anything about this game. You know, if you're proud of picking the horse who had the better sheet number but got beat ahead, that's you know, you're not getting it, then it's about getting to the wire first.
Yeah, well, for me, it's about value. You know, I mean, people, and a lot of times, and we'll, maybe we talk about the Kentucky Derby for a minute, and, you know, this kind of ties into that whole philosophy as well. There's a difference between picking the most likely winner and making the best, smartest bet. Because a lot of times, the most likely winner is so exposed from a public standpoint that they're way, way over bet. And there's really not so much value in finding the most likely winner. I mean, that's not always the case, but often the public is very, you know, you see that at Keeneland today. I don't know, eight of the races were won by favorites. And so in this game, like you said, Bill, when you're wrong, it's often a factor of other things. There's, you know, a bad start, a stumble, so many other things can happen. Even if you're right, you can still be wrong. So it's about finding ways to make money rather than, oh, I was right. That's great. You know, you were right. You picked a 3-5 winner. Good job, you know. But, like, I would rather be wrong most of the time but still make money in the end.
Yeah, well, I'm referring to Mike Monroe here. It's tough, two Mikes. Mike Monroe and I have gotten tips over the years, and Mike, I think you and I talk about it all the time. One of the best angles we find is second-time tip. Mike Monroe, you want to explain that a little bit, what we mean by that?
Well, a lot of times, you know, the horses, you know, and I'm sure Mike Hogan knows too, you know, you're down there and people say, oh, this horse is breezing up a storm and working up a storm. You know, can't lose first time out. We've been told that many a times. And, you know, even as an agent, you know, when the trainer tells me, you know, he loves the horse, and the horse is working great. And, you know, your rider climbs aboard and works the horse in the morning and says, you know, comes back and, you know, not necessarily tells the trainer, but, you know, tells you as the agent, you know, he might need one. So, you know, you find it interesting that, you know, some guys can just pop with first-time starters, you know, at a great rate. And then there's a lot of guys that, you know, a lot of horses that just need the race.
Yeah, you know, there's an example that I had not too long ago, Dick Mandela, Paradise Woods. When she debuted, she was bet like she'd already won the race even before the race had started. And if you look at Mandela with first-time starters, he has a consistent trend of not regularly winning first out and generally underperforming. Even if they get bet, it's often an indication that the horse has a lot of talent, that there was a story about how the horse was working in the morning, but the end goal is not to win that first race. The end goal is 2, 3, 4 races down the road, and it's exactly what we saw with Paradise Woods. She didn't win first out. She was odds on, and then she won next out, and then you see what, you know, she's going to be the favorite in the Kentucky Oaks. And so it's that sort of thing. It's not about, like, look, you know, it's not about necessarily picking who the best horse in the race is. Sometimes it's that. It's sometimes about who is the most likely winner and who is presenting the best value in terms of the way the public is choosing to bet the race. And that's what I would do is from a statistical standpoint is I would take a look at things like that. When I saw Mandela's stats with first out runners, you know, it was a complete play against, even if I recognized that this horse most likely had a lot of talent.
Right. Right. And one thing that is interesting, and one thing that I became aware of just recently, because there's a thing out now in Las Vegas called entity betting, and it's an attempt to allow people outside of the state of Nevada to bet on sporting events, and they've come to the conclusion that messenger betting is illegal. So messenger betting is me telling you, if you're in Las Vegas, to place a bet on the Rangers for me. That's considered to be illegal, I guess, under Nevada law. And if it's illegal under Nevada law, it's illegal under federal law. And so they've come up with this convoluted scheme where you can actually place money in what's a mutual fund, which will bet games for you and try to get a better return than you could get in the stock market. And you have to not have the ability to choose, because otherwise you're making the bets. So you have to leave it up to them. So it's a glorified tout service. It's kind of ridiculous. It only handles $1 million a year, and it's really, to me, it's just an exercise in futility. But that long setup was only to bring about this. I found out through going to that seminar that they have been approved. Mike Monroe, you might be interested in this. There's a huge Hong Kong bettor who has been approved to make bets through the Naira Rewards setup from afar, and he bases it on a computer program that's based upon odds that he determines what they should be. And then the computer program places the bets at the last minute to make those odds what it is. And Mike Hogan, getting to your thing, it's a question of value. You know, he has determined that if a horse is 4-1, he'll take it, and if it's not, he won't. And it's all done automatically. And in some ways, that explains the large late minute shifts that we see on New York races as they approach the gate, or actually when they're in the gate.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you hear it all the time. You mentioned that the tout horse. You know, we can think of probably 20 or 30 horses just in the last year that have been touted so much that they can't lose first out because they're working up a storm. They're working with a stakes runner. There's a difference between getting so connected to a horse that you think, oh, I'm being told that this horse can't lose first out, and then you see they're 1-5, 2-5, and you have to ask yourself, to what extent is the goal, even if the trainer thinks that this horse is going to win, what extent is a maiden special weight in February the goal for this horse? You know, Arrogate lost first out. Obviously, he was the best horse in that race, but that doesn't mean that he has to win that race. And so it comes back to using the stats, using what the public gives you to try and figure out and try to not get so married to a horse and divorce yourself a little bit from it. And think of it in terms of a value standpoint. Is this a valuable wager? Is this a smart bet? Is this something from an odds standpoint I'm willing to take? That's where I use the statistics. And I often will look at it from a trainer intent standpoint. When I look at trainer patterns, it's not necessarily – I mean, I look at it from what is the trainer trying to do here, and there's a positive or an intention angle to it, and then sometimes there's not at all. Some of it is maybe not an intention, and it's more just a case of the way things happened. An example I'll use for that is the difference between choosing a trainer choosing to put blinkers on, or choosing to try a different surface, or choosing to stretch a horse out or cut a horse back. Those are kind of intentional angles. And sometimes they're a case of what the conditions are, but most likely with a horse, a trainer is going to choose to do a certain thing based on how the horse is training, how the horse has been running, how the horse has been working. And so I differentiate those intentional angles from other ones that may not be intent. Horse is coming off a long layoff. I mean, if a trainer is really good off of a 180-day layoff, there's no way a trainer and an owner is going to say, okay, let's just put this horse to the sidelines for 180 days so that we can win a race 6 months from now. They're doing it usually because the horse needs to grow up. The horse
an
has
injury.
An issue.
Right.
Yeah, some sort of other factor. And so the difference between those trainer staff – sorry, my 4-year-old was dropping some trash downstairs.
I know the feeling. We've been there.
The difference between that and in a conscious angle is I look at it more from the standpoint of how likely is a horse to get back to a previous level of performance or potentially improve if they're a 2-year-old growing up to a 3-year-old, or what if you could project improvement. Or is it a trainer who consistently has a pattern of giving a horse a race or two before they show their best effort, either off a layoff or you know, after a debut. Those are the kinds of things that I look at. And, you know, I mean, when I think people went a little far with some of the work that I was doing with the formulator and saying, oh, it's, you know, it's like a blind bet. You know, this trainer's, you know, 8-for-14 off a 180-day layoff. Well, you know, it's not a blind bet because they're not going to send a horse to the sidelines for that long unless there's
right.
a real reason. It's just, okay, you can feel confident that the trainer's probably going to be have him ready in the first start. It's more
right.
from that standpoint.
Right. Well, you know, a couple of things. And Mike Moreau and I remember Mage Odom, G.P. Odom. Actually, I think I've even written an article about him in PastTheWire.com. But right, Mike, he'd wait all year to win up in Saratoga. He was the opposite of that, Mike Hogan. He was the guy who would sit
yeah.
on a horse all for 8 months, and he'd walk them over, and they'd be ready, and they'd win, and they'd pay 3-to-1, and he'd say, what's wrong with 3-to-1 when I took most of it, you know? But trainer intent is a big thing. We spoke earlier on the show here about how we had Kieran McLaughlin on. He's open that he likes to win allowance races at Keeneland for the pure reason that the ownership, Shadwell and Godolphin, think it's proper that they run and win in front of the stable help that were there when they were born and helped breed them. You know, it's not really anything other than that. It's other than, you know, make sure you have some winners. We don't care about whether it's a short price or not. And if they won another race today, he went wire to wire with a horse. And Christopher Clement talks openly about how he tries to win at Belmont. And I guess Tom Morley has now spoken how he's aiming for Saratoga. So that's clearly a big factor, and it does add to it. But along those lines, tell us what your statistics show about the Belmont, what we should keep in mind.
Well, you know, I mean, the way I approach a race like the Derby is, you know, just make sure you've watched all the replays. I mean, these are horses that everybody has access to watch the preps. Everybody, even you almost have too much information about them. You know to what extent, you know, you talked about the Girvan quarter crack. You know if there's a hangnail. You know if a
Correct.
Horse is seemingly not working well or looking great in the morning. And I almost try to, you know, I try, again, to keep it to the basics. Watch the replays. What they do on the track in the afternoon, to me, is more important than what they do in the morning. Obviously, if there's a quarter crack or a major issue, that's a different story. But a horse who is just too slow on paper and in the races, that might look great in the morning, is still probably going to be too slow in the afternoon on the first Saturday in May. So I do that. And then I also, you know, I try not to get, like I talked about what the market gives you. I try not to get too married to any individual horse, especially this far out. You know, we're still a week and a half away from the race. We don't know what even the final field is going to be. We don't know what the post positions are. When you're talking about 23-year-old colts, the post positions can change drastically how likely a winner a horse is. And so you don't want to say, oh, you know, no matter what, I'm going all in on Classic Empire. And then all of a sudden you have to change things because he drew the one post or, you know, even the two posts. Those are the sorts of things that I try to wait. I try to wait as long as I can before making any sort of even betting strategies going into a race like the Derby.
All right. Well, I mean, the big one, of course, and Mike Monroe, get your thoughts on this. Todd Pletcher's poor record in the Belmont is something that gives people pause because he takes the same route sometimes. And, you know, I'm rooting for Always Dreaming because West Point and Anthony Bonomo, we're friends of ours. But they've had some poor success with going from the Florida Derby to the Belt to the Kentucky Derby. Excuse me.
It's a tough road, Bill, and Mike. I'm sure you agree. You know, everybody's priming to win that one race, and how they come up to the race, how they're training up to the race. But I'm a big proponent of Mike Hogan's philosophy. I watch replays. I believe in key races also, and I think Mike, I think the Fountain of Youth is going to come up a super key race going into the Derby, and you know, it seemed like a lot of the horses that came out of the Fountain of Youth went on and did some good. You know, Guinevere came back and ran in the in the Florida Derby, where you know, the track bias was kind of against him, and you know, he still ran on. I think he's going to run a big race in Kentucky, but you know, I'm going to look further on the Derby. But I'm with you. I believe in watching races, and I also believe in the old key race factor. I believe certain races, they're just paramount in horses. If you go down the line and see who's come out of the race and run well, and you know, I just think that's a big point, especially with a race like the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you know, I think pace is going to be a big factor too. And we've seen in the last few derbies, especially since the point system, the paces have not been incredible. I mean, they've been fast, but they haven't been complete pace meltdowns like we saw, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago even. And I wonder if some of that has to do with the point system. The ones that have early speed that are in the race now, these days, with the point system being in place, those tend to be classier horses or ones that can carry their speed further than some of the ones that we saw earlier that were essentially sprinters trying to stretch out for the first time. So that's another factor. You know, I tend to downgrade the truly deep closers unless something crazy happens. You know, if Todd Pletcher putting blinkers on Palace Malice, you know, things like that can lead to a huge pace collapse. But for the most part, the ones that are at least forwardly placed or have some rateable speed, those are the ones that I'm going to be focusing on a week from Saturday.
I agree. It seems like the last couple of years have been like the Barbaro move, where you were like fifth and sixth on the outside, and you know, and just moved into the pace at the right time, took the lead at the right time, and galloped on. You know, there hasn't been that wire to wire move that we haven't seen in a while since the Baffert horse. But I'm with you. It seems like that middle of the pack move is the one that's been winning the race on Derby Day.
Well, I mean, it seems like there's going to be a lot of horses making that move. I guess the pace doesn't project to be that strong, and I would think Always Dreaming will be a part of it, right? You would think he'd have to be if not on it, certainly close to it. But it seems like so many of these horses will be making that, trying to make that late move, not necessarily the middle one, but you have a lot of deep closes, and I guess you're wondering, you know, where they wind up on that scale, or who gets the right spot, I guess, is the real question, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of that real work is going to come after the draw, at least for me. You know, I mean,
right,
the draw is going to affect so much of that, which is why I try not to get too far ahead of myself with trying to lay that out a week and a half in advance. But yeah, I mean, it's all an interesting topic, and it's certainly stuff to think about and stuff you can start plotting out. But the real work will start after Wednesday.
Right. Speaking about value, let's talk about some value. I tend to be an old school. I tend to bet mostly win in place, sometimes exact is. I'm not a big fan of the new trend of the horizontal bets. And maybe because of me, it's just too complicated for me. But really, it's because I don't see them having any real connection to each other. So it's kind of not as pure. And I say that, and people get very upset. So I don't want to start that controversy again. But I just don't see any connection between a mile and a quarter race on the grass and a maiden claimer that happen to be in the same sequence. They just don't. To me, they just don't match up. It's akin to parlaying a win in the Belmont Stakes onto a hockey bet or a basketball bet. But that being said, I look for value a lot of times in the place pool, and two come to mind, and I wonder if either one of you recognize it. One is, I think, the greatest place bet of all time, and the other was a pretty impressive one, and both in Triple Crown races. And you know, I don't mean to put anybody on the spot, but anybody have any thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I will say this, though. I mean, certainly with the Derby, you're not going to have any other, at least in America, any other 20-horse fields. And so even if you like a horse, you don't have to just bet the horse to win. There is value in the place pool. There is value even in the show pool, especially with a long shot. more so than on any other day or any other race this year. So it's something to keep in mind. You know, I'm not against the horizontal bets, but I would say this. You need to, before you go in, especially before you do much or invest too much, you want to at least have two, ideally three opinions in those horizontal wagers that you can try to connect. Otherwise, you're right, Bill. There's better ways to play your money through the windows, win, place, even the daily double, those sorts of things. Even the vertical wagers, you do an exacta or even a try if you're interested. If you have a strong opinion in the one race, you don't have to try and create an opinion in the other three races and play the pick four.
Right. I mean, I didn't mean to put everybody on the spot. That's not fair. But I'm thinking of two things in particular. One, American Pharoah paid 540 or 560 to place, which to me was, you know, just a tremendous value there. But the one that I'm really thinking of is Secretary. It paid 240 to place in the Belmont. You know, which is mind-boggling because he paid 210 to win. You know, so that tells you how askew and crazy that betting pool was with that mania back then.
Yeah, and I got to wonder if that would change now. We have much more visibility into the pools, and you talked about computer bettors. They would probably recognize some sort of discrepancy and hammer that so that maybe we wouldn't see that as much these days. But you're right, you know, and sometimes you can find value just based on the way the pools are playing out. And that's something to definitely take a look at.
Right. Speaking of Mike Monroe, speaking of horses looking forward to the Belmont, I guess Thunder Snow seems like he's not going to come for the Derby, although they haven't announced that yet, but you would think that they might try to bring him over for the Belmont. I know we had high hopes that Reach the World, Bob Baffert's horse, was going to be eventually Belmont bound, but he seems to he broke down, so that's another loss in his barn. Mike Hogan, we here at Belmont in New York always start looking forward to in some ways we treat the Kentucky Derby as the prep for the Belmont, but it's sort of a parochial type thing. Anybody catch your eye who would like to go much longer than the Belmont, the Derby distance?
Oh boy, I don't. You know, that's you talk about getting ahead for the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's what, 9 days away. Add another 5 weeks onto that, and it's really getting ahead. I haven't gone that far yet, but yeah, I mean that's when you're going to look at the ones that just want to seem like they want to run all day, at least from the underneath standpoint. You know, those are where you can fill out your exactas and your tries with horses that maybe aren't the most likely winner, but are ones that would certainly relish the 12 furlongs.
Right. Well, Mike Monroe, anything we've forgotten on the Derby? I know there's so many people who've been so nice to us on the show that I find myself rooting for everybody this year. I don't even think I can bet it because I want to root for everybody. I want to root for the people over at West Point and with Always Dreaming. I want to root for Graham Motion and Rajiv, and, you know, who've been friends to the show. I hope they all get a clean. They all can't get a clean trip, but I also hope they have a safe trip, and I hope it's a clear cut victory. Whoever wins it.
Absolutely, it's always a great race, and you know, I look forward to maybe seeing John Oxley back in the winner's circle and Mark Cassie's Classic Empire, as long as he behaves. You know, he has a habit of not behaving, so let's just hope he behaves on Derby Day.
Yeah, well, that's the wild card, right? I mean, that's the when we spoke to Rajiv Miraj on the show last week, he said he had no concerns at all about that with Irish War Cry because it seems like nothing bothers him, and that's a big factor. I mean, you can't, you know, coming unglued in the paddock is more likely on that day than any day. Although maybe, who knows? I've been in the Pimlico paddock enough times to know that there's no room there. That's absurd.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Mike Hogan, tell us what are you doing now? You're still staying involved. You're still on Twitter all the time. How are you staying involved in the game? Do you think you'll be back in the limelight at some point, or are you going to focus on other matters?
You know, I'll see. I'm still kind of keeping the options open, just checking out what's available. I think most likely I will end up in a different industry, probably go back into the marketing industry from a marketing agency advertising standpoint. But even still, you know, I'll be definitely interested in racing. I've been a race fan all my life, and you know, I'm now. People know who I am. People lean on me for certain things. I'm not going to go away completely.
Yeah, well, that's we're so glad you joined us here tonight. And as you said, you and I have traded opinions over the past year or so on Twitter. And I think you were the one who actually called me out a little bit on Greyjoy, Mike Monroe, when my horse Greyjoy won two races in Saratoga in 5 days, which was, you know, obviously a proud moment, but largely
yes,
a fluke.
Cool.
You know, I managed to get a rise out of Rich Perloff, who was a guest on the show too on TVG, by asking what did Songbird and Greyjoy have in common, and they were at the time they were the only two two-time winners at the Saratoga meet at the time, you know, and he got a big kick out of that. And Mike Hogan, I think you called me out on Formulator when you said I was asking a question I knew the answer to because I just like to see it in print,
yeah.
But.
I know your background is in law, so I kind of knew you were taking the lawyer approach there.
I just wanted to hear it said. Well, you know, I'm hoping that we have a couple more winners this year in Saratoga because there is a certain joy to you know, to winning when there's a bunch of people around. It's great to win watching on television, but it's fun rather on television, but it's great to win when people see you on television as friends, but it's great when they're all around you, and there's no place like that, pretty much like Saratoga or on the big days. So Mike, are you going to make it to the either the Derby, the Preakness, or the Belmont? Do you have any plans to attend?
Definitely not the Preakness or the Derby. We'll see. I've been to the Belmont before. We'll see what it holds. I don't have any immediate plans, but you never know.
Right. Well,
I'll certainly be out
at
Belmont at some point before the meet ends, though.
Well, good. Well, please let us know. I'd love to meet you in person, and you know, Mike Monroe can get us a perfect spot right at the end of the line for any place we want to go. Right, Mike? You can get us on a Thursday at Belmont. You can get us a seat at the hot dog stand on the second floor of the clubhouse there.
Does it still exist?
Yeah, no kidding. That is among the saddest things.
You were talking to Mike Hogan before about May Jodum. I was thinking the same exact thing, Bill, when you brought that up. If he ran six horses at 6 2-year-olds in Saratoga, five of them would win, and one would be second with the worst trip in horse racing history, right, Bill?
Yeah. It was, and sometimes he'd win them with the, they'd be siblings. Sometimes they'd win them with the same horses he won the year before. And Wagley comes to mind. Wagley was a horse
Wagley
that he had. And actually, I've written an article about it. I'll send it around again because it was all about trainer intent. But I think his name was Mage Odom because I think he was like a major, or his father was a major in the Civil War. I mean, it was, you know, he was a real character, and he got his horses ready and he bet them heavily and he had a big cigar. And I think even on the backstretch at Saratoga, Mike, one of those lanes is named after him. It's Odom Lane, and I'm pretty sure that's named after him.
Yep, George P. Mage Odom.
Yeah, George P. Odom, G.P.
Cool.
Odom. The right. G.P. Odom, but everybody knew him as Mage. And
right.
When I wrote the article, I had the opportunity, I found his son. I think it was actually his stepson, but his son, who's our age, but Mage was like a generation older than this fellow's mom. You know, when he married his mother, And so he was two generations older, and he just, you know, he just couldn't believe someone was still interested in him, and he gave me a lot of time to on an interview to put together the article. But yeah, there was you knew all was right with the world when you were in Saratoga and May Jodum was running a horse who hadn't run in 8 months, and he was 5-2, and he won by open lengths. And as Mike said, every once in a while I wanted to lose, and you really couldn't figure out how it happened. But that was back in the days when. You know, there wasn't quite as much statistics, and it was just kind of the people who knew, you know, the knowing people gave knowing glances to each other about, you know, how could you miss that one? And even Mike King Leatherberry was that way too up in Saratoga. Every once in a while, he'd bring a horse up from Maryland, and you know, the big question it was so difficult to move horses around back then that you knew it was total full intent. You know, and I always remember King Leatherberry never bothered to bring. And that's a statistic I'd like to look, but King Leatherberry never bothered to bring the silks with him, so it was always running in the house colors, and you know I'd love to see that statistic somehow. What a flat bet on a flat win bet on horses who wear substitute silks would be, because over the years it seems like they win much more than their share to me. But
yeah, that's the sort of stuff that I find really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if we'd get that one though. I don't know where that database would be. That might not exist, the database of who wore substitute silks. But anyway, I digress. I don't want to. Right. Mike, I don't want to hold you longer. I know you had some pressing time there, and I hope you'll. I certainly hope you'll come back. Do you have any standouts for this weekend, or are you just waiting for next weekend?
No, pretty much just focusing on next weekend. But thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed talking, and I really appreciate the you know, reaching out to me. So
yeah, anytime, Mike. And I'm gonna send you an article on May Jodum when I find it. I'll post it on Twitter if I'll figure out how to do that. And it's worth a read because it's kind of history in the making. And please, you know, come back and join us anytime here, and spread the word that we have some fun here. And whenever you have any particular. You know, insight or any stories, anything you want to do, just please, you know, please follow us up. And this, it's the tape is always available. We've had 100-something episodes now, and the tape is always available. If anybody missed it, who wants to hear your speaking voice, you know, please send it along. So.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Good luck,
Mike Hogan, everyone. Well, I got, Mike, we got disjointed there a little bit. I got a little rambling. I didn't mean to do that, but it's just funny just thinking of Major Odom back in those days. But one thing I wanted to – the point I was trying to make about this computerized betting from afar, from Hong Kong, I've only had this information for 2 weeks now. But, you know, you and I have always been impressed, as most race trackers have, by late money. You know, you see late money – it used to be a sign that a horse was really live if late money came in on a horse. And we always assumed it was somebody who was either connected with the barn or somebody who was, you know, in the know. And I think that was the case for many, many years. Now that it seems to be somebody in Hong Kong on automatic pilot, you know, betting off an algorithm, it's not quite as impressive to me as it once was, right?
No, absolutely not. You know, but it's funny you said that. I've noticed a couple of times with the races lately where on the last flash or during the race that the prices on these horses have changed, sometimes, you know, like more noticeably than others. Like I saw the other day on a horse I rode in the last race, the horse was 9-2 going into the gate. Halfway down the backstretch into the turn, the horse was 3-1. That was the last race the other day, a race that I won for John Toscano.
You know, it also happened to the Paradise Farms horse who ran on the grass the last race one day. It was the eighth race. It was during the week. And you know, the people from Paradise Farms said to me, you know, what is that all about? The horse went from 10-1 to 9-2 as they were running down the backstretch. And none of us thought he had a particularly good chance. So, you know, yeah, I think it is. I think it's just an automatic pilot. It's somebody with a ton of money, with a significant handle, who has probably, the way I understand it, has programmed in that if certain horses are outside parameters of what they're expected to be odds-wise, just to place a large bet on them. So I don't think it's a matter of even liking the horse or not liking the horse. I think it's just that, you know, if this horse is higher than he should be 3-1. If he's higher than 4-1, you know, place a bet on him. And I think it's kind of on automatic pilot. I don't think there's anybody even making the decision. I think it just kind of happens with the pre-program, and it all, by definition, it has to happen at the last minute. Yeah. So.
Absolutely, and like you said, it's been noticed. It's been noticed.
Yes, I mean, that's a whole different take. I have to recalculate my, our thoughts on what late money means. But with that, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. We moved all over the place. It was great hearing about Emerald Downs. I mean, Emerald Downs is probably a place that I hadn't thought of going to. I didn't realize it was as close to Seattle as it is. But that's having Mount Rainier in the background certainly. And as Matt Dinnerman says, when the weather's nice, it's packed. And I guess that's a way of saying it's not, the weather's not nice that often. So when it is nice, everybody goes out. But
right. Will I see you at Belmont tomorrow?
I'll be out there later for the second race, the second half of the race. Well, yeah, I'll be out there most part of the day, probably most of the day now. I thought I had something to do in the morning, but I don't. I do want to mention this to Rudy, that Sweet Ray of Sunshine, two half siblings, won on the same day. That's worth probably mentioning. He might get a kick out of that, so we'll make.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Do you have a winner for us for opening day?
Well, just what we spoke about in the first race. You know, I like Shug McGahee's horse, Mayaka River, and probably, you know, hoping to upset the Todd Pletcher runner. But Mayaka River would be my big play. How about you? Have you looked at the card closely enough?
I have looked at the card. I like in the fifth race, I like a horse named Super Knight, which is first time Rudy off the claim. I'm very interested in this horse's work pattern. He seems to, that Rudy's worked on him right along for his first race off the claim, and he's 8-1 on the morning line, and I think it's an awful general price, awful generous price in a $32,000 claimer going a mile. He's well positioned outside. There's some speed inside of him. He looks like a one-run horse, and I think the mile's going to fit him perfect. And anytime I can get 8-1 on a Rudy Rodriguez horse, it's definitely worth walking up to the window.
Yeah, I agree. Especially first time off the claim. I mean, going back to Mike Hogan's statistics, you look at that first claim. So first time off the claim, Rudy Rodriguez is almost 40%. You know, which is just unheard of. So yeah, I mean, and I somewhat doubt you're going to get the 8-1 that they're advertising now, but you know, we'll see. But
how about the horse the other day, Bill, which Rudy really needs to be complimented for, Tug of War. The horse was practically eased his last start. Rudy came back and ran him last Sunday in the first race at Aqueduct, and he won going away.
Right,
15-1 on the morning line, and he opened up 9-2.
Well, you know, he's always been known for being able to find a problem with a horse and correct it, and you know, he takes his time sometimes with some of these horses who he claims, and when they come back, boy, they're ready to go, no question about it. But no, I do. I look forward to seeing everybody out there tomorrow, and I hope we picked up some new listeners tonight. I think we may have with Mike Hogan, and certainly we've had some friends out in Seattle. And I just, Mike, thank you for joining here, and I'll see you tomorrow.
My pleasure. I hope to see you out there tomorrow, and we'll definitely take in a couple of races together. I hope to see everybody out there because Tom Durkin used to say, you know, welcome to beautiful Belmont Park. And that's what it is. It's a beautiful racetrack. I look forward to being there. I hope it's a great meet for New York. We got grass racing back. I just think it's a great time of the year before the Derby with all the Derby hype coming up. And Belmont. I love the Belmont meet, Bill. You know, I'm a big proponent to the Belmont meet. I think it's an exciting meet for everyone. And you get to see some good young 2-year-olds, and you get to see some some older horses. The grass horses coming back. The horses coming back from Florida. You know, it's I really look forward to it. But just one more thing on that on the horse tomorrow, Super Knight, for our viewers, our listeners actually. Rudy claimed the horse on March 10th for $25,000, stepping him up to $32,000 tomorrow. Goes to his go rider, Irad Ortiz. And since Rudy's claimed him, he's come back with five works. His last work being on April 22nd, he had a couple of slow breezes. And he comes back April 22nd, a 5/8 work, a minute and three breeze in third best out of 19 over the Belmont main track. So I think this is a good angle play tomorrow, Bill, for all the listeners on Racetrackers.
Perfect. So that's race five. It's post time is 1:05, so fifth race probably be somewhere in the 2-3 o'clock area. And a perfect way to start off the weekend with a winner, Super Knight, fifth race on Belmont on tomorrow, Friday. Well, with that, I'm going to play the music, and maybe we'll celebrate by going to our sponsor, Poppy's, after the races. So with
sounds
that,
good, Bill. Sounds good. That Poppy's is a great spot. They're big fans of racing. It's a great lunch crowd and great dinner crowd. And like I said, you can go in there anytime, and the races will be on. That's one of the best parts about Poppy's, other than the food, which is off the charts.
Yeah, and there'll be somebody sitting there with an opinion at the bar about some whatever race it is you want to talk about. There'll be someone who probably had a hand in it one way or the other. But with that,
right.
I'm going to play Jonathan Stetton's Pass the Wire ad for us tonight to play Dean Martin. Then I'll play the song, and we'll be out. So, Mike, see you tomorrow. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to all our
guests.
Thanks, Bill.
Good night.
Good night.
Gal is like a racehorse, I play her to win.
For the most interesting, exciting, and unique columns and articles in the sport of Kings, read Pass the Wire by Jonathan Stetton each week. Each and every week, Jonathan brings his unique perspective on the game to readers everywhere. You'll find his columns at PassTheWire.com, along with racing's latest news and so much more. It is truly horse racing uncensored, and you can get Pass the Wire delivered right to your inbox each week. Jonathan's own private trip notes, second to none in the game, are even available through his tracking trips. Don't miss out. Visit PassTheWire.com for all the best in the sport of Kings. Imitate it, but never duplicate it. PassTheWire.com.
Who's got the action? Just lay it on the line. I'll bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. You will be mine. I'm a race tracker.